Hello and welcome to the podcast, What We Teach Our Children. I'm Kim Clyden. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent and empowered children? And they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded though by people who can support us, your family, friends and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This podcast is about everyone who plays a role in that story at every level of society. I started this podcast because I'm passionate about stories and the power they have to change lives, share knowledge, develop language, compassion, and empathy. Driven by a desire to positively shape humanity's future, I've written and published 4 picture books illustrated by a dear friend of mine, Di Scally-Heron. Some of my earliest memories are of books. Enid Blyton, Beatrix Potter, A.A. Milne, and Hans Christian Andersen. Thanks to my mother, who loves to read. To this day, she goes to bed with a good book and a green apple every night, reading until 2 and 3 a.m. Reading and being read to is a fundamental part of communication, both written and verbal. Unfortunately, there are many children in the world growing up without access to books and educational texts. Fiona Luth is working to change that for the children of Fiji. In fact, over the last 13 and a half years, Fiji Book Drive has delivered 348,504 books to 238 schools and kindergartens, which they continue to serve. Fiona, how did you get started in this space? I mean, what was your background like?
I was an English teacher, and as a child, I read a lot of books. But really, it came about through I had an epiphany on a very remote island in Fiji called Kandavu, which is the fourth biggest island in Fiji and not a tourist resort. And this epiphany or flash of inspiration said to me, I want to help as positively impact as many people as I can. It was a spiritual moment, so I knew, hold on to that thought. Then some days later, I saw a school near where I was staying, and I found out that all schooling in Fiji is compulsorily done in English. And a school of 80 students, Wanasai District School, had about 10 books in absolutely pitiful condition, like no child would be attracted to reading through that. And I just thought, how incredibly unfair. My children went to Elstonwick Primary School. They are swimming in books. I take them to the local library. They have a lot of my childhood books, my husband's childhood books. There are so many books in their school library, and these kids have 10 books, and that's all I've got access to. So that's really how it started in a nutshell. And then I had a conversation with a friend after that trip to Fiji, which was at a very pivotal time in my life as my second parent had died. And I said, oh, I want to send books to a school. And she said, oh, Fee, don't you know we're freighters? We'll do it for you. So that's really in a nutshell how it started. And then I had the advice of a couple called from Peter and Margaret Long, who were retired teachers, retired Brits, and they ran a charity called Children of Fiji. And so they were able to advise me in the early days, which is absolutely terrific because you wouldn't want to do it flying blind. Like, you need the advice of other people. So that's really... yeah, that's a little bit how it started.
What role do you think your upbringing and the way your parents put an emphasis on books plays in that passion?
Well, I would say it's a very, very large part of it. I think, you know, my mum used to take us to the Hawthorne Library, and she used to read to us a lot as children, and her mother was also an avid reader. So I always knew I was very strong in reading, and then so much comes from that, strong in writing, strong in speaking. And then in terms of me creating a charity, well, like if you'd said to me 15 years ago you'll be running a charity in Fiji, I would have thought I just couldn't even conceive such a thing. But my mum did have breast cancer on and off for 27 years, so she was on, and she mostly rejected Western medicine, so she was pretty alternative. So I think in terms of kind of role modelling and role modelling strength and going against the flow, that had a massive impact on me. So I think there's sort of the culture of my family, which is that, you know, I was a strong reader and that was actively encouraged. And I think then there's kind of the emotional blueprint of both my parents passing away by the time I was 36, but also my mum living on and off with breast cancer for 27 years. So I think all of those factors kind of led me to the point where I am. But I always had a strong social justice muscle. Like, my parents were, they were actively involved in volunteering their time for a ski club, a family ski club we used to belong to. My mum belonged to the Red Cross. Even, you know, when my dad was in his early 20s, briefly did a bit of teaching in a prison. So they were pretty involved in the community. So, you know, I think it was a mixture of things that got me to this point.
When did you realise your love of books was going to be a career as an English teacher?
Well, I mean, I started teaching at Melbourne Uni. I think I was a bit of a, I'm not sure that I was studying that hard, Kim. I was sort of mucking around and having a lot of fun. I don't think it really, really struck me until I was in the classroom. I don't think I really, or, you know, when I did my first teaching rounds, but I think, you know, sometimes things happen step by step. It's not like really until I was teaching did it really fully sort of hit me.
Your parents must have been pretty supportive of whatever you wanted to do to even go to university. You mentioned the community service. You mentioned how much of an influence your mum's illness had had on certain aspects of how you feel about other things. But what sort of role do you think they played and those behaviours that they've exhibited in creating who you are today?
Well, I mean, they were hugely supportive and accepting. You know, if they were alive today, they'd be, what, 81? And, you know, they were quite strict, but they were very supportive and they weren't very critical. And compared, you know, look at some of my friends' parents who sort of wanted these perfect children. My parents weren't like that. You know, many people in their generation might be, you know, have prejudices against some sort of minority group. They were never like that at all. They were very inclusive and progressive in their thinking. So I think just their unconditional support. I mean, they weren't perfect, but, you know, I look back at them and think, gee, you know, they really gave it their all and did their best. And they were also very gutsy. So they were very physically gutsy. You know, my dad did the Great Victorian Bike Ride a couple of years in a row. I mean, he did it, you know, he had like a tumour sort of growing on his neck and he was doing it. And my mum went to Bhutan, which is not a cushy place to travel, and she had a tumour that, you know, used to behave in a certain way. So I think they were very physically courageous, and I think they also used to question things around them. So I think they were quite courageous in their thinking as well, actually.
Critical thinking is crucial to our future and, of course, even raising children. You love the books you passed on to your children. But why do you think it's so important for children in Fiji to have access to books as well?
Well, I think it's incredibly important for all children in the world to have access to books, not just Fijian children, all children. I mean, really, Fiji came about because I was there, I saw the need, and I did something about it. But, I mean, our motto is readers are leaders. So much comes from reading, and it's not just the act of reading. Like, the studies have shown that children who read a lot have greater empathy. And that makes complete sense because you're putting yourself in the shoes of a character or someone who's in a completely different life to you. My daughter, for example, who's 10, has read so many books on the Holocaust, and she'd be the first person to, there was a synagogue in Melbourne burnt down, which is absolutely horrific. And, you know, like, my daughter and I spoke about that. You know, it gives you awareness of world issues. It gives you confidence to verbalise your ideas. It helps you with your writing. There are just so many things that come from reading. And also, you know, people that are readers, not just functionally literate, but that are readers, are more empowered people generally that have more life opportunities.
You mentioned many of the books you saw in Fiji were English written books and there weren't a lot in native tongue. So how have you managed to tackle that situation?
So, and that took a long time to find books. So they, the one, a favourite word you hear all the time in Fiji is in the vernacular, which means in the dialect. That took me 10 years to find a place that sold books in the vernacular in Fiji. And so we buy them and then we give them to the schools, but we don't have the money to do every single school that we send a curated library collection to. We don't have the money to give them all books in the vernacular. Like, we spent $10,000 this year and we're able to help 21 of the schools with books in the vernacular out of the 50 we helped this year, because, you know, we need to have money in the bank for other, you know, operational costs. We need to pay our staff in Fiji and whatever. So we buy them, and it's actually the most wonderful tiny little outfit called Waka Publications, and they're a Pacifica tiny business, but so they'll have things in Tongan, Kiribati, Tokelauan, PNG languages. So we buy them from there. And then the way I found out about that business was I wrote with another lady a book, and then we got it translated, and it was set in maritime Fiji, and I wanted it to show certain specific things that happen in the daily life of a child in a maritime Fijian context. And then we got it printed. It wasn't published, and we just had the money to do 200. So we gave them to schools as sort of a pilot program. They absolutely weren't perfect, but then the Fiji Sun somehow got wind of this and wrote an article about it, which I didn't know. And then someone emailed me, who is an expert in the vernacular, Fijian guy, and he'd done his master's in Itoke studies, which is Indigenous studies. And then he recommended this place where we buy these picture books from. Yeah, so that's what we do. So we send curated library collections, and most of the books are in English, and then we buy 200 books in the vernacular, and we buy a range of them.
How do you actually raise the funds to buy those books? And you mentioned $10,000. It sounds like a lot of money to many people.
Well, so, I mean, you know, we have a lunch. We're doing our Christmas appeal now, our tax time appeal. So basically donors, that's how we raise money. Purely and simple. We don't have any grants or government grants or anything like that. Yeah, so that's how we raise the money, donors. And we get a lot of services that are donated. So we had free freighting this year. I'm not sure if that will continue or not. In the past, we've paid for it. We have free warehousing, which is absolutely hugely helpful. So we've had a lot of free services, which enable us to then spend donated money on things like books in the vernacular or other things. So, yeah, we fundraise.
You said you curate collections. How do you actually receive those collections of books?
So we have a whole lot of schools in Victoria that drop off. And initially we used to go through an organisation called Independent Schools Victoria. So they drop off library books to the warehouse. So we really strongly encourage them to check out donation guidelines, what we do and don't send. But there's always a percentage that you don't send. Public Libraries Victoria, and then the general public. And we also get about 10 pallets from a group. It's a not-for-profit, actually, in Adelaide called South Pacific School Aid. And they're a bunch of extremely kindly senior citizens who pack up deleted library books in South Australia and then send them at various places, like according to request. So sort of all over the world, but mostly Pacific. So they we went halves in the trucking. So we got 10 pallets from them recently. In terms of it being a curated library collection, it's quite simple. But so for a primary school, on average, it's about 1,000 books. More than that, and they can't manage it. And it's about 300 picture books, 250 reference books, a whole lot of easy readers, middle readers, emerging readers, and then we say nothing harder than Harry Potter, because most people know Harry Potter. So it's a library collection and a range of library books, so not just fiction, non-fiction as well is really important.
Do you have a selection criteria for the types of books you'll actually take?
Absolutely, we do. Books have to be an 8 out of 10 or better. So a 10 out of 10 is you've literally just walked out of the bookshop and bought it. So don't send anything below an 8, so it can't be scribbled in, defaced. Can't have coarse language, overly sexualized content. Fiji is a very Christian country. So, for example, someone donated the title of a book once called Killing God. So I always use that as an example of what we don't send. Someone also donated a book once called The Marijuana Cookbook. We also don't send that. Something which is highly, highly specific to Australia, like A History of Australian Pubs, which someone donated, we don't send that. So basically it has to be in very good condition. The information has to be current. So in any nonfiction, it has to be current, no racist, sexist, misogynistic language, that sort of thing.
What do you notice over the years that you've been doing this and providing those books in those communities where you've actually been able to do the 1,000 books and the vernacular?
You notice so many things, and really you'd almost want to spend 2 weeks in a village to capture all the stories. The very first thing you notice is it absolutely boosts the morale of the village. So it's actually not just the children that benefit. It's the teachers, because they can do their job properly. It's the parents, because they can support their children. It's grandparents, because they can also support their children. But it also sends the village a message that people that you're never going to meet in another part of the world care about you. And that's actually a very, very strong message. And I explain in Fiji how many people have given up their time to pack books, how many people have donated money, what it costs to send the books, you know, how we have to do fundraising, because often they think a common question I get is, am I a millionaire or do I have a book factory? Because they often think the books are brand new, and sometimes we do get brand new books donated from publishers, but mostly they're very lightly used. And I explained, no, that's not how it works. And when Fijians, when I explain the process and how, you know, this is my job that I don't take a wage for, I've just started taking it a stipend in the last 2 months, they are more than gobsmacked, and they often tear up and are very emotional. So there's the pretty profound emotional side of it, I would say. And then teachers report, so the first improvements they see are in spoken English, because the children are reading in English. And then usually it's sort of 1 to 2 years for it really to take off. But I'll read something out to you. But so we helped, and we help all different regions of Fiji, but one province of Fiji called Natasiri, which is in the interior of the main island, which is called Viti Levu, we helped all the schools there. And I'll read out what one of my ops team said to me. She said, Bula Vanaka, that means a warm hello. I'm glad to tell you that most schools in the Natasiri province school had a good path in academic results. So their results are improving. Especially in the remote schools like Naboro, Sawanikula primary schools and Nakurukuru Vakatini primary schools, where we donated books. They had 100% pass in their school. That's when they get to know the useful, this is what I'm reading directly, the useful of reading books, thanks to Fiona and your team, your marvellous support of schools in Fiji. So, you know, their results go up. And then, you know, there are many, many other factors, like it depends how well education is supported in the village, how much the village leadership is behind it, the leadership of the school. But at the absolute base level, it absolutely boosts morale, and spoken English goes up, and then the reading, and then how much they implement programs and all those other kind of variabilities. It varies enormously. But, you know, in really rough terms, if I was to break it down, I'd say 33%, it's just a stratospheric runaway success. 33%, I'd say, is really good. And then 33%, it's hard to measure.
How long have you been doing this for?
About 13 and a half years, Kim.
So in that time, some children would have graduated from a level of school. Have you had any stories coming back from people who have actually come out at the other end and had the benefit of perhaps 10 years of access to books?
Do you know, we haven't, and we should track that. No, we haven't, and that's something I probably need to investigate, because when I'm in Fiji, I'm doing, you know, I'm probably there for 2 weeks, twice a year or two. You're doing so many things. You're trying to document the stories, document the social impact. We haven't had that specifically, but that would be good to do. I agree.
I'd love to hear about, you know, someone who's gone on to study further education or even become, you know, a professional in a field. That would be an amazing capture of the benefits of reading. As a whole, I mean, you mentioned it's not just about children in Fiji, it's about children all over the world. From your English teaching perspective, how important is reading to a child, especially with their parents, to build bonds?
I can't emphasise enough the importance. Super duper 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 important. There's the building bonds thing, but there's also like hearing the cadence of their parents' voice, hearing their intonation, getting used to listening to different words, but also being able to visualise in their mind, or being read to at an early age, but not even at an early age. Even in, you know, mid-levels to upper levels of primary school, hugely beneficial. And it's very comforting for children.
Where would you like to see this go from here?
I guess I'd like to see us growing in terms of schools that we help in a year, but also deepening the impact. Deepening the impact is actually the more important thing. And that's about follow-up visits, people in the field, talking to the community, books in the vernacular, and then us helping the schools year after year. Because you don't just give them a library collection and then go see you later, never see you again. It's like a marriage. And, you know, at the moment we're married to about 238 schools. So
there's a similar conversation going on in Australia about the loss of languages in our Indigenous people here. Is this something that could be replicated easily in a place like Australia with government support?
It's a really interesting question. I would not like to pretend that I think probably not, no, because I think, I mean, there's the Indigenous Literacy Foundation doing great work, and there's also the, there's another one, Indigenous Literacy and Numeracy Foundation. I mean, I think there are other small projects, but I think Indigenous Australia, one of the difficulties is, well, to move anything around Australia is just so costly. I think our logistics are the most expensive in the world. And the distances are greater. We have very complex logistics in Fiji. I don't think it would be replicated, be able to be replicated quite. It could be maybe a similar model, but I think before you do anything anywhere, you have to have deep and abiding contacts and on the ground a huge amount of knowledge. And an Indigenous Australia is not one sort of big amorphous mass. It's a whole lot of different communities that just happened to be here before we were. So maybe to an extent, but I mean, I think Australia is quite a different context.
This has been an absolute pleasure. If people would like to help you in fundraising for this Fiji initiative, where can they find you?
Well, they can go to our website, www.fijibookdrive.org. Or they can email me at fionaluth@fijibookdrive.org. They can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We're Fiji Book Drive there. I'm Fiona Luth on LinkedIn. Absolutely love people's help on the fundraising. Because the simple truth is with charities, the more money you have, the more you can do. It's quite simple. So to me, it helps level the playing field. If children have access to quality books, it's not just an educational issue, it's a social justice and a human rights issue, I believe, that children should have access to quality books.
In the spirit of Christmas and giving, let's all think about how we can support Fiona to reach more schools and kindergartens in Fiji. Perhaps you could give the gift of a donation to your child's teacher next year instead of another mug. All the links are in the episode description, and if Fiona captures any of these stories about graduates, we'll share it here. Thanks so much for listening. I really enjoy bringing these stories to you, and I vowed decades ago that I would change the world one story at a time. The only way we can do that is by sharing the stories we love with those we love. This podcast is recorded at Launchpad Studios thanks to Split Spaces, a nest for new ideas.